So we're talking about yoga and meditation. And so the philosophy behind that, which is given in the Bhagavad Gita, actually the whole second chapter of Bhagavad Gita deals with the difference between spirit and matter. And we are considered spirit, and the body that we inhabit is considered matter. And spirit is symptomized by consciousness. Wherever you see consciousness, there's a spiritual soul present. So animals, they're also conscious. If you step on your cat's tail, it'll make a lot of noise. Animals have desires, like we do desires, another symptom of consciousness, that the conscious self, or in Sanskrit, desires actually originally in Sanskrit language, ancient language. The word term, technical term, is atma, for the conscious self. And that's our actual identity. And our consciousness pervades our entire body. We feel in different parts of our body. It's described the conscious that atma itself is situated in the heart. And sometimes, if somebody says, point to your head, point to your arm, point to your leg, and point to you, you're naturally pointing to your heart. So we have a sort of a intuitive sense that we reside in, actually. We don't usually point to our head, point to our heart. So the idea of this yoga and meditation is actually to understand ourselves to be the pure consciousness beyond the body. And there's three features of spirit. Spirit is eternal, spirit is cognizant, and spirit is full of spiritual pleasure. And that when we become in touch with our spiritual nature, we experience these three things. And that is very wonderful, actually, because we're actually looking for some happiness that doesn't go away. And our whole life, Mahadev, you kindly agreed to start in here. we're looking for a happiness that doesn't pass away in this world, but unfortunately the things we seek happiness in, we find that it doesn't last. It may last for 5 minutes, 5 hours, or 5 days, or 5 years, but there isn't any situation of unending happiness in this world. And therefore, sometimes people are apt to change their position because it didn't turn out just as nice as they thought, so they try something else. And that isn't just exactly what they wanted in the meantime. So there's a tendency, because there's an incompatibility between our spiritual nature and our material surroundings, that we don't actually meet that satisfaction that we've been hankering for our whole life on the material plane through the different experiences that we have through the body in this world. But by practicing meditation and yoga, we can come in touch with our spiritual self and actually experience a spiritual pleasure that isn't subject to passing away in the course of time. And that's what this yoga is all about. Actually, there's a nice verse in the Gita that I like to quote. Yoga, although people think of the sitting postures when we talk about yoga, that actually just one 8 steps. The official yoga is called Ashtanga Yoga. Ashtanga means 8, and Anga means limbs. And the sitting postures are just the number 3 out of the 8 steps of practice. And the 8th step, the highest step, is called Samadhi. And there's a description of that Samadhi in this Ultimate Yoga Encyclopedia of Bhagavad Gita. I'm going to read that. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness. Boundless transcendental realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth. So it's a realization that once you get it, you don't lose it. It's not something that can be stolen away by any external source. And upon gaining this, he thinks there's no greater gain. It's an experience that is so good that you can't imagine anything better than that. Being situated in such a position one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulties. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. So it's samadhi, the pleasure that's so good, even the ordinary sorts of things that bring us down don't bring us down. The bad weather and insensitive comments by others, or the indigestion or whatever it may be that bring us down. It's so good that they don't touch our happiness. So this is something that's valuable, something that's worth trying for. Because it's a whole category of happiness beyond anything we've experienced thus far. So, I can go through the 8 steps of this yoga and talk about how that relates to meditation. So the first 2 steps are called yama and niyama. And basically, they're things to do and things not to do. And there's a whole list of them. And if I didn't bother to research and write down, but it said one of them on each list, there's one that's number one. And the number one on the 2 lists are ahimsa, or nonviolence, and cleanliness. So even before you begin to practice yoga, you're actually supposed to cultivate things like cleanliness and nonviolence. Because it's really more than just exercising the body, but elevating the consciousness. And one feature of nonviolence is, as I said, we're all spiritual beings, but every living creature, every plant, every animal, every human being is a spiritual being as good as our very self. So to have a benevolent attitude to all living beings is essential to success in realizing the spiritual nature. Because basically, if we consider any living creatures less than ourselves, we have not actually understood our spiritual nature. Because on a spiritual platform, we're all equal. We're all living entities are brothers and sisters. So those are yama and niyama, regulating our lives according to the higher principles like cleanliness, nonviolence. Then third is the asanas, the sitting postures. And these aren't ends in themselves, but the asanas help, if you've actually practiced the yoga asanas, you find that it makes your mind peaceful by performing the bodily exercises. Kind of, in order to control the body, you have to control the mind. So you actually get some experience of controlling the mind, and by controlling the mind, you get a sense of peace. So that third item is the asana, or sitting posture. And then the fourth is called pranayama. Pranayama comes from 2 Sanskrit words, prana, which means the life force, or the life breath, and yama, which means control. So it's more or less a mechanical way of controlling the mind. What they do is they'll breathe in one nostril, they'll hold it, breathe out the other nostril, and then pull it out, and like alternate like that. And if you do that, you find that it makes your mind peaceful. It even makes your mind more focused than just doing the body exercise. It gives it even a greater degree of focus. Maybe you've been angry and you've taken a few deep breaths and you realize it's helping to get the anger out of your system. There's a relationship between the breathing and the mind. And if you can control the breathing, then you can purify the mind and pacify the mind. So we're halfway there. 8, we've done 4. And the next one is called pratyahara. And basically, ahara means eating. And pati means the opposite. But it's more than just eating. It's actually going for whatever whatever sense object your sense is looking for. So it's like, for the eyes, it's seeing attractive things, or for the sense of hearing, it's hearing melodious things, or the sense of smell, it's smelling fragrant things. But the senses, our senses naturally, they're directed outward toward this world of sense objects. And therefore, it's actually difficult to meditate, because we're being dragged outward, out of our inner self, into this world, by these senses. So once we have some control over the mind, by the breathing process and the asanas, the sitting posture, then we can actually control the mind, so it's not brought out into the external world, but it's focused within, and we can begin to meditate. And then the last three are dharana, jhana, and samadhi. And we all have different levels of meditation. Dharana is just collecting the mind and focusing it, and jhana or meditation is focusing the mind on one point, and the samadhi is the complete absorption in the spiritual nature, which I've got a description of here. So there is a relationship between the yoga and the sitting postures that people are familiar with of yoga and meditation, that the sitting postures are meant to help control the mind so that we can actually meditate. Now, another thing about meditation is, if you go to different groups where they're meditating, you'll find that people meditate on different things. And the ultimate object of meditation is also described in Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes people, they try to make the mind devoid of all thought. And they consider, if they're successful in this, that that's gotten nirvana, or that's freedom from all whatever it has, anxiety. But that is actually very difficult. One of the dangers of trying to get all thoughts out of the mind is you can end up thinking about not thinking. So that's one of the drawbacks of this process. So there's another the goal of actual meditation is given in the Bhagavad Gita text at the end of the meditation chapter. Says, and of all yogis, the one great sage who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendent loving service to me, he is most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all that is my attainment. So that brings him, he talks about ourselves as being conscious beings. So there's a supreme conscious being. And that the ultimate, the real yoga is to link our consciousness with the supreme consciousness. Now, that supreme consciousness is described throughout the Bhagavad Gita. One particular verse I like is this verse that says, I am seated in everyone's heart. From me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known, I am the compiler of the Vedanta and the knower of the Vedas. So, what these Vedas are books of ancient wisdom from India, and this Bhagavad Gita is actually a summary of the Vedas. So the person who's speaking, Krishna, he's identifying himself as being that person in our heart who gives inspiration. And especially if we're students, we know how important inspiration is from within the heart. Because you can study for hours for a test, but if you don't actually remember at the crucial time what you study, then you're in the ground. Yeah. Then that remembrance is not something that's under our control. You can try. Sometimes you're giving a lecture, or you're having to take a test, and there's some key point that you wanted to make, but it just doesn't come to you. Maybe you wanted to quote something out there. Our remembrance and forgetfulness is controlled by someone other than ourselves. And we're actually dependent on that personality. So What's cool about this verse really is it brings in a lot of things. It brings in the speaker of Bhagavad Gita. It brings in the person who gives us knowledge and remembrance in the heart. And it brings in this whole tradition of wisdom is coming from that person. That person, Krishna, who's speaking the book, and that person who's giving inner direction. So the idea is that if our heart was so pure that we could get pure spiritual wisdom from Him, that pure spiritual wisdom would actually be that knowledge which is in these Vedas, which is summarized in this Bhagavad Gita. So that the speaker of this book is actually the Lord of the heart, and actually the goal of meditating yoga. So, and in some of the other yoga books, it actually described what the form of that of the supreme goal in the heart looks like. And the people who are really serious about the meditation, they meditate on that form as it's described in these authoritative books. So there's just so much. One reason I wanted to talk on this is just like we talk about yoga and people just think it's a sitting posture, but it's a whole, it's like seven other parts of the practice, and there's the whole philosophy behind that practice. Knowing ourselves as eternal spiritual beings, knowing that there's a supreme spiritual being, and that this yoga is a way of linking with that supreme spiritual being. It's a lot more than putting on some yogi pants and drinking some coffee and producing your waistline. Feeling good. but anyway, so this eightfold practice of yoga described in the authoritative liturgies is actually not really meant for this age, because in this age there's a lot of disturbance. Actually, there's a whole verse which talks about how you should practice the yoga. Sort of interesting. And this chapter 6 is really the whole meditation chapter. And there's this verse, practice yoga, one should go to a secluded place. Okay, so first you got to find a secluded place. One should lay kusa grass on the ground, and then cover it with deerskin and a soft cloth. The feet should be neither too high nor too low, and should be situated in sacred space. The yogi should then sit on it very firmly and practice yoga to purify the heart by controlling his mind, senses, and activities, and fixing the mind on one point. So, as we can see, it's attempting to give a lecture in this room. It's very difficult to find a place, but it's quiet in Tucson or most. Any place in America, you have to really go out to the woods somewhere. And even if you went out to the woods, there's an airplane that flies overhead, something like that. So, because our minds are generally very much distracted in this age, and because it's hard to find a truly secluded place, it's very difficult to practice the silent meditation where one visualizes the form of the supreme in the heart that fixes the mind. So there's another kind of yoga, which is easier. It's called bhakti yoga. And the primary practice of bhakti yoga is what's called mantra meditation. And mantra meditation is easy because it brings us to the point of a meditation without going through a lot of the practices. You don't have to do the sitting postures, number three. You don't have to do the breath control, number four. And basically what you do is you just chant the mantra, and by saying the mantra and hearing the mantra, your mind is absorbed in meditation on the sound of the mantra. And the sound of the mantra is a spherical sound. So basically we were talking before how that the supreme soul is actually the goal of the yoga and meditation on that supreme soul. So it's described that there's no difference between the Supreme Soul and the names of the Supreme Soul. So there's different, this mantra is composed of different names indicating the divinity. And in the Vedic tradition, there's not like there's just one name for the divinity. There's actually one book of wisdom called the Vishnu Sahasranam, which is the thousand names of God. Some different religious traditions, they make some claim that their tradition has to be one and only name of God. That's not actually... What was interesting this year, I learned that in the Kabbalah, there's actually 72 names of God. And in the Quran, there's either 99 or 100 names for Allah. So, and similarly, in this Indian tradition, there's many, many, many names. Right? So, that's actually... one should actually meditate on any name of the divinity in one life. There's one particular mantra that's recommended for this particular age in several of these ancient books. One's called the Kali Santarana Upanishad. A group of books called the Upanishads, which are philosophical spiritual texts. And several of these mention this one particular mantra. So the whole idea is you say the mantra and hear the mantra, and throw the mind in the mantra, and then you can actually, if you can do that perfectly, which is takes some time, you could actually attain that stage of complete absorption in the divine known as samadhi that we were talking about earlier. So we don't think we'll be so successful with the piano going in the conversation in the next room, but at least we'll do better than if we're doing silent meditation. So on the back of my business card, I have a mantra. So I'll pass it out. There's two for you. You know the mantra, and you know the mantra. She knows the mantra. And I know. You do too. Yeah, you do. So, I think what we'll do is we'll this mantra is chanted in two different ways. One way is it's done sort of silent, sort of quietly to ourselves. As a meditation, personal meditation, and then it's also done with musical instruments as a musical meditation. So it's done sort of as a quiet meditation for your personal benefit, and then with other people as a musical meditation. And both are valuable, and some people prefer one, and some people prefer the other, and generally people do a little bit of both because they both have their respective blessings. I thought we'd try a little bit. Basically, we advertise, we like people not to stay longer than they say they're going to stay. So we want to do a little practice in meditation. And,
we have to have these beads because they
know
we're going to change out
tomorrow. Yeah, well, I was using these beads because we don't always have enough beads for people. And it's not a thing to worry about. So you don't have to worry about beads if you don't want. But, and the other thing was, just before I start, so between 9 and 8, we'll start just chatting a little bit, and then we'll serve out this nice cake for dessert. And we'll also, we're supposed to tell everyone who came that they like it if all the guests buy something at the cafe before they leave. We do that, so they'll feel good about us coming. Actually, the reason we're meeting here is the person who agreed to be president of this club decided didn't want to get a PhD at U of A anyway and went back to India. So we've been gradually recruiting people to be officers in the club, and we finally got it together. And now we have a real live room. So if you want to come next week, we'll have a room on the campus, so which may be closer to you. And it won't require you to buy something. And hopefully we'll not have a piano in it. People studying.
Oh. Next Tuesday.
Next
week it will be somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And that place is, I might as well say,
yes.
It's a place called the, let's see, it's called the Tubac Room. T-U-B-A-C. And according to Jarrell, it's on the fourth floor of the student union, did they say?
I think it's the fourth floor of the student union.
Yeah, yeah.
What's
your time? Yeah, 7:30 next Tuesday. Yeah. And so did anybody have any questions about all the things I said? I should have asked your questions earlier.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you could
You are a little bit unfamiliar with some of this stuff. I know some of the other people are familiar. Could you follow what I'm saying?
Somewhat.
Fairly
familiar.
Do you have any questions about this really
The beads? Because I know there's several... I know there's Buddhist and,
right.
and Indian and...
Yeah, we do have these beads. That, they're basically they're made out of different substances. That there's different trees. One's called neem and one's called tulasi, and they make beads. And there's a ring of 108 beads like that. And in our usual practice, you meditate on the beads so you get a sense of how much you're saying the mantra. Some people use a clicker.
Actually, I have a
computer
my iPod
touch has
virtual beads.
Oh, virtual beads? That's
Simon.
Is
that
free
app? I think it was 99 cents.
Nice.
Hey,
Simon. Did you download it? Yeah.
That's new. I never heard of that one before. I heard of it.
That's
great.
Can you
just
go like this?
One beat at a time. It even has the mantra on here
and everything. It has the beats.
Huh?
You just
kind of slide. Wow.
What is that? Tulasi.
Yeah. Tulasi is a very sacred tree.
Well, it's the Hare Krishna. Yeah. Hare Krishna mantra and Tulasi.
That's
wow.
Okay, so we better start, otherwise we'll run out of time and hours it'll be. We'll charge $20 or whatever for the offense of staying late. So I think we'll just chat maybe for 5 minutes and then we'll sing for 5 minutes. And so we'll all chant in unison. And there's one mantra that we say first. And I won't teach it because we're short on time, but you can just listen to our space and know it. You get some blessings to chant. So, let's say that mantra. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. You follow the words? It's Hare Krishna and Rama. Is that okay? Interesting? Okay. So, I'll just chant for 5 minutes. Okay? What is that for you guys? Yeah. And even though, one thing I noticed was, even though there were so many distracting things going on, it was actually possible to concentrate and increase the volume and to focus more. It's like with the silent meditation, it's so difficult to do when it's like all the things going on. Anything in particular anybody noticed about it?
I just couldn't hear the piano.
Wow, that's pretty good. You must have practiced in the previous life.
just
because
I felt kind of really light.
Wow.
I don't know, I felt really nice.
Mm. Yeah, there's all different kinds of, like, some people, they forget about the anxieties that they had earlier in the day. And some people, I had one friend who, his ex-wife said something that made him really angry, so he's just about to say something really nasty to her, and then we had the singing meditation where we sing say the whole same mantra with musical instruments, and we do that for like half an hour, and afterwards he was just so amazed at all that anger that was ready to burst out of him. It completely dissipated. It was like completely peaceful, you know, and it was like just amazed. There wasn't a trace of it.
I'm having a bad day. If I can't use just for a couple of minutes, there's like everything so much better.
Yeah. And some people, they chant in the morning, that they experience that the days when they chant in the morning, that the whole day goes. So you want to try singing? No. The other people turn to hear us.
So, I said about the morning, so I'm going to put it around more.
But we have some God-given instruments. Yeah, you can clap your fingers and you can clap your hands. Or you can clap your feet.
Virtual cartel?
Yeah,
virtual cartel.
For real?
Yeah. That's too much. I guess that's why you're president of the club.
It's the easy one.
Is this tune... Let's see, is this... Tell me if this tune is too much. Now, the other thing is that you do it responsibly. So I sing, and you listen to me very attentively. And then you sing, and I listen to you very attentively. And then we sort of are... meditation feed off each other. I become inspired by your devotion and you become inspired by my devotion. It just grows and grows. I go, yeah, so I go first and then you go. Very good. I'm very inspired. We got it to so it's actually more powerful to sing it together with a group. And I like that better. I like to do it. I like to sing to the hour today in public. So thank you so much for coming. We're going to serve out the cake now, which is part of our program. No sacrifice according to Bhagavad Gita is complete without the distribution of spiritual food. But I was thinking of talking about the idea of self-realization, because it's a word that people don't really know what it means exactly. We can talk about what it means. But if you have some other ideas, you can put them down. And another thing you should know is that there's a restaurant called Govinda that we have programs at every Wednesday. Do you know Govinda?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's over on Blackledge. You know Blackledge? Yeah, great. So it's almost on the corner of First and Blackledge. There's a tire place, and it's just next to the tire place. So it's a little bit on Blackledge. And we have a Bhagavad Gita class on Wednesdays, and we have a program with some singing and a lecture and some more singing and a full dinner on Sundays.